Good day, beautiful people, and welcome to another episode of the Total Disclosure Podcast. Today is the second episode in which we will be talking about sleep paralysis, the night hag or old hag, a name given to a supernatural creature commonly associated with this phenomenon. Some people think it's just science, it's just related to the REM phase. Others believe there's way more about it. A lot of people seem to believe that sleep paralysis is actually provoked by the presence of a supernatural malevolent being, which only affects certain individuals with certain sensibilities, those who are able to feel or see more than the average folk. These people often experience terrifying visual and audible hallucinations. Others feel as if a person is sitting on their chest or choking them. Others even experience sexual assault. If you're like me, you experience sleep paralysis a few times a week, let's say. On the worst days, I experience it several times a night, which actually makes me just scrap my plans of going to bed, which serves me as an excuse to reignite work instead of doing the right thing and resting a little bit. It just goes to the point that I don't even want to lay my head on the pillow because I know what's coming. And it's not because it's scary. I mean, it is. But on average, it's mostly inconvenient, annoying. It's unpleasant. The experiences in which I've had really scary visions, really scary apparitions, or where I've interacted with entities. And I'm not going to say that's for sure. I don't like saying I know things, like I know 100% how they work. I don't know. I'm very interested in finding different points of view of how things work or why they happen. And so I suggest you also give science a chance, but at the same time have enough respect for life and for the spiritual realm. Obviously, I believe science has an agenda of not only discrediting the existence of God and Jesus Christ, but also destroying God, destroying the people's faith. For the most part, most of my life I was agnostic. I believe, I was raised Roman Catholic, but I quickly scrapped that religion. I believe around age 11, I decided I didn't want anything more to do with it. There was something that triggered that. I wasn't molested by a priest or anything like that, but I did felt being targeted. Like they're kind of watching you too closely. They maybe say a thing or two during confession that are kind of weird. So being a survivor of sexual abuse by that age already, I knew I had to take a distance from these guys. And I was kind of a rebel against religion, against dogma, against even Jesus or God himself. That's not easy to say now, but it's reality. I've lived through both sides of the coin, and I've come back to the good side. And I believe it is my duty, above all, to try and beg you, to ask you, to keep an open mind. Never be absolute about your own views. Try to be open to change. We continue because knowledge is power, and the more we know about the enemy, the more effective we will fight against it. And so sleep paralysis is something that I will not define, despite considering myself an expert in practice, because I am a chronic sufferer of it. It has affected my sleep, my moods, my everything. There are some theories that I want to talk about, and there are some things that make sense to me and others not so much. And please, if you also suffer sleep paralysis, send me your experiences. I would love to hear them. This is something I'm very curious about. This is one of the strangest conditions the human mind experiences. And you won't believe it until you do. It sounds like, you know, these people are, they're having a vivid nightmare and they think they're being possessed by the devil, or, you know, they're being paralyzed, because it sounds weird, but there's way more to it. Italians have striking cultural beliefs about the origin of sleep paralysis. More than a third of those from the Abruzzo region thought their sleep paralysis might be caused by the Pandafetch creature, a demon of sorts. Like Egyptians, Italians also experience sleep paralysis more frequently, with prolonged paralysis and excessive fear of the experience. In both groups, beliefs about the disorder heighten symptoms in a bizarre mind-body interaction with nosebleed-like effects. An active imagination has the astonishing ability to shape physiological experiences, some scientists claim. Based on this theory, it appears that the more people fear sleep paralysis, the more they experience it, and the stronger its effects are. Okay, I'm gonna intervene here. I experience it a lot, and I'm not afraid of it, because I know they can't hurt me. Whatever things I've seen under this state are not capable of physically hurting me. They can psychologically and emotionally torture you, or try to. But I don't think I fear it. I certainly don't like it, for not saying I hate it. Because, frankly, it undermines my whole life. If I don't sleep well, I cannot think straight. If I cannot think straight, I cannot be effective at work or with total disclosure. I'm gonna be tired, I'm gonna be cranky, I'm gonna be undermined. And if you have other psychological conditions besides the sleep paralysis, it just adds up. And listen, you don't have to be hard on yourself. These things are certainly disruptors of peace. They disrupt your life. They disrupt your emotional state, your stability, and you have to fight them. You cannot surrender. You cannot give up. You cannot let the world take you down with it. I mean, if it's science, if it's just a neurological response to the REM sleeping phase, so be it. You have to fight it anyways. If it's something more esoteric, more spiritual, with more reason you have to fight back. So, according to this theory, what were once thought to be benign, even inventive beliefs, have transformed the disorder, triggering conditioned fear and coloring the content of the hallucinations. Anxiety and stress predispose people to an attack, so those who dread it are often more likely to experience it. This is not entirely true. Sometimes I'm very stressed, sometimes I'm very anxious, and I don't experience it. So, according to these studies, sleep paralysis is nearly twice as common in Egypt compared with Denmark. And as discovered in Italy, those who believe their sleep paralysis may have a supernatural cause are also more likely to hallucinate during the attack, including experiencing a ghostly sensed presence. Once sleep paralysis occurs, it is subsequently interpreted throughout the lens of fear, leading to more anxiety and unwanted awakenings, and effectively, more sleep paralysis. I'm not entirely sure this is accurate, because if this was the case, I would get it all the time. It would never stop. And I'm constantly under stress. You know, being relaxed is not one of my specialties. I'm always alert. I'm always ready to take action. This vicious cycle, which Dr. Balan Jalal calls the panic hallucination model, continues to feed into itself until sleep paralysis becomes chronic, prolonged, and worse yet, potentially psychopathological. Part of his study, Sleep Paralysis and the Monsters Inside Your Mind, was published on Medium last year. This exposes the intriguing possibility that sleep paralysis is accompanied by certain beliefs is not just frightening, but may also be potentially traumatizing. So if you want to check his studies, you can go to Medium and search for sleep paralysis and the monsters inside your mind. And, you know, that just makes sense. I'm not saying demons are somehow involved in these attacks
all of the time. I don't think every single sleep paralysis experience is the same. They are really prone to be different between each other.
Your mind will always enhance your projections into your reality, especially if you have other underlying mental health conditions. As the study continues, quote, the effects can linger long after an episode ends. Notably, in one study in Egypt, we found that people who have experienced the phenomenon have elevated trauma and anxiety symptoms relative to those who have never experienced it. Those with visual hallucinations, seeing demonic beings, say are even more at risk. In another study in Abruzzo, some scientists showed that fear during sleep paralysis and fear of dying from the attack were linked to trauma and depression symptoms. Those findings indicate that when it is understood through a particular cultural filter, the disorder can cause psychopathology. For those suffering from sleep paralysis, sleep is not an escape from reality. Indeed, for some, sleeping can potentially lead to a mental disorder. The human mind is vastly more mysterious and occasionally malevolent than one would have thought. Balan Jalal is a neuroscientist at the University of Cambridge and a former fellow at Harvard University. He is a co-author with Devon Hinton of Harvard Medical School. I'm a believer of God, and I believe the best trick the devil played on the humankind is to convince them he doesn't exist. And so I don't entirely like this science people. You know, and if you're a doctor, if you work in chemistry, if you work in a laboratory of sorts, even if you do coding or computer science, you're going to probably take offense of what I just said. But I just don't like the superiority complex, the thought that they have everything figured out, or that they have the goal to deny the existence of something bigger than us. And I don't want to be a narcissist either. I don't want to say that I'm better than anybody. But intelligence-wise, I'm sorry, and I can prove this, I'm in the top 1% of the world. I'm not going to tell you my exact IQ, but it's way above 130, okay? I know the average is around 100, 115, I believe, between 90 and 115. Anything below 85, 80 is deficient. Anything above 110, 115 is genius-like. So I'm above 130. Let's just say I'm very capable of learning everything I want to learn. I'm very capable of doing everything I want to do. And just because you don't have an IQ above 110 or 115 doesn't mean you can't do it. It will take more work, but you can. So, you know, fuck these people. Fuck these science people. Fuck these doctors.
Fuck these fear-mongering idiots that only pretend to know more than you do, to control you through fear and just flat-out mind control.
They are not better than you or me. They were never better than you or me. I'm sorry to get it carried away, but this is a deep subject and we need to think deeply. So let's continue. There's a common denominator in sleep paralysis, and it's called narcolepsy. Narcolepsy is a sleep disorder that is often misunderstood. And because it's so crucial to sleep paralysis, I'm going to dedicate a few minutes to it. It is characterized by severe and persistent daytime sleepiness that can cause impairments in school, work, and social settings, as well as heighten the risk of serious accidents and injuries. Although rare in comparison to many other sleep disorders. Narcolepsy affects hundreds of thousands of Americans, including both children and adults. Understanding the types of narcolepsy and their symptoms, causes, diagnosis, and treatment can empower patients and their loved ones to cope with it more effectively. What is narcolepsy? Narcolepsy is a disorder that disrupts sleep-wake processes. Its primary symptom is excessive daytime sleepiness, or EDS, which occurs because the brain is unable to properly regulate wakefulness and sleep. Normal sleep unfolds throughout a series of stages, with rapid eye movement, or REM, sleep occurring in the final stage, usually an hour or more after falling asleep. In narcolepsy, rapid eye movement sleep is irregular and often begins within minutes after falling asleep, which is much earlier than normal. REM occurs quickly in people with narcolepsy because of changes in the brain that disrupt how sleep works. These disruptions also cause daytime sleepiness and other symptoms of narcolepsy. What are the types of narcolepsy? According to the International Classification of Sleep Disorders, there are two types of narcolepsy: narcolepsy type 1 and type 2. These are known as NT1 or NT2. NT1 is associated with the symptom of cataplexy, which is the sudden loss of muscle tone. NT1 was formerly known as narcolepsy with cataplexy. Not all patients who are diagnosed with NT1 experience episodes of cataplexy. Type 1 can also be diagnosed when a person has low levels of hypocretin 1, a chemical in the body that helps control wakefulness. Even when not present at diagnosis, cataplexy eventually occurs in a significant number of people with low levels of hypocretin 1. Then we have narcolepsy type 2. Type 2 was formerly known as narcolepsy without cataplexy. People with type 2 have many similar symptoms as people with type 1. They do not experience a sudden loss of muscles or low levels of hypocretin 1. If a person with type 2 later develops cataplexy or low hypocretin 1 levels, their diagnosis can be reclassified. This change in diagnosis is estimated to occur in about 10% of cases. How common is narcolepsy? Narcolepsy is relatively rare. Type 1 affects between 20 and 67 people per 100,000 in the United States, according to a population-based study in Olmsted County, Minnesota. Type 1 is 2 to 3 times more common than type 2, which is estimated to affect between 20 to 67 people per 100,000. Calculating the prevalence of narcolepsy is challenging because of underdiagnosis and delays in diagnosis. Many patients are not diagnosed with narcolepsy until years after their first symptoms. As a result, some estimates place the prevalence of narcolepsy as high as 180 per 100,000. Narcolepsy occurs roughly equally in men and women and can affect both children and adults. It can occur at any age, but onset has been found to peak at around age 15 and again around age 35. The symptoms of narcolepsy can have notable effects during both daytime and nighttime. The most common symptoms include excessive daytime sleepiness, or EDS. EDS is the cardinal symptom of narcolepsy, affecting all people with the disorder. EDS involves an urge to sleep that can feel irresistible, and it arises most frequently in monotonous situations. Severe drowsiness often causes lapses in attention. Narcolepsy can cause sleep attacks, which involve falling asleep without warning. After short naps, people with narcolepsy usually feel temporarily refreshed. Trying to avoid sleepiness can trigger automatic behaviors that occur while a person is unaware. For example, a student in the class may continue writing, but is just scrawling lines of gibberish on the page.
Disrupted nighttime sleep is a sleep fragmentation common in people with narcolepsy who may awaken multiple times during the night. Other bothersome sleep problems like excess physical movements and sleep apnea are also more common in narcoleptics. Sleep paralysis. People with narcolepsy have a higher rate of sleep paralysis, which is a feeling of being unable to move that occurs while falling asleep or waking up. Sleep-related hallucinations. Vivid imagery that can occur while falling asleep or when waking up. This may accompany sleep paralysis, which can be particularly disturbing or frightening. Cataplexy is known as a sudden loss of muscle control. It only occurs in people with NT1 and not NT2. An episode of cataplexy often occurs in response to positive emotions like laughter or joy. Cataplexy normally affects both sides of the body and lasts for a few seconds to a few minutes. Some people with NT1 only have episodes of cataplexy a few times per year, while others can have a dozen or more episodes per day. Although all people with narcolepsy have EDS, less than a quarter have all these symptoms. Also, the symptoms may not occur simultaneously. For example, it's not uncommon for cataplexy to begin years after a person has started to have EDS. The effects of narcolepsy and its symptoms can have significant consequences for a patient's health and wellness. Accidents are a pressing concern, as sleep attacks, drowsiness, and cataplexy can be life-threatening when driving or in other environments where safety is critical. It is estimated that people with narcolepsy are 3 to 4 times more likely to be involved in a car accident. Narcolepsy can also interfere with school and work. Sleepiness and pauses in attention can harm performance and may be interpreted as behavioral problems, especially in children. Many patients with narcolepsy feel stigma related to the condition that can lead to social withdrawal. Without proper support, this may contribute to mental health disorders and negatively affect school, work, and relationships. People with narcolepsy are at a higher risk of other health conditions, including obesity, cardiovascular problems like high blood pressure, and psychiatric issues like depression, anxiety, and attention deficit or hyperactivity disorder, also known as ADHD. Research has started to reveal details about the underlying biology of narcolepsy, but more is known about NT1 than NT2. Even with growing knowledge, the exact causes and risk factors for each condition are not fully understood. NT1 is a disorder marked by the loss of neurons in the brain that are responsible for making hypocretin, also known as orexin, a chemical that helps to regulate wakefulness and sleep. People with NT1 have a loss of 90% or more of the normal number of hypocretin-making neurons. A genetically susceptible individual may experience damage to these neurons in an autoimmune fashion after an environmental trigger. Some evidence suggests that NT1 fluctuates seasonally, with a potential link to the influenza or the flu virus. A rise in the onset of NT1 was also seen after the H1N1 epidemic and with a certain brand of vaccine used for H1N1. Of course, they claimed this was rare. Possible connections to other types of infections were also found. Based on this data, one theory about NT1 is that an external trigger activates the immune system in a way that causes it to attack the brain's neurons that make hypocretin. However, this autoimmune response inconsistently occurs and therefore is not the only cause. Researchers have found that as many as 98% of people with NT1 carry a gene variant known as DQB1-060215. This gene plays a role in immune functions, so this variation a genetic susceptibility to NT1. Although this explanation of NT1 is widely accepted, it is not yet definitely proven. Even though researchers know more than ever about NT1,
Most individual cases still occur with no clear direct cause. People with a family history of NT1 have about a 1 or 2% chance of developing the condition. This is a small risk overall, but a significant increase in risk relative to people without a family history. In rare cases, NT1 occurs because of another medical condition that causes damage to parts of the brain containing hypocretin-producing neurons. This may be known as secondary narcolepsy, and it can occur from brain trauma or an infection in the central nervous system. Little is known about the biology or risk factors for NT2. Some experts believe that NT2 is simply a less pronounced loss of hypocretin-producing neurons. Others think NT2 may primarily be precursor to NT1, but cataplexy has only been observed to develop in about 10% of cases of people initially diagnosed with NT2. In some instances, NT2 has been reported following a viral infection, but most cases do not have an established cause. As with NT1, NT2 can arise because of other medical conditions such as head trauma, multiple sclerosis, and other diseases affecting the brain. All said, there is no specific treatment for sleep paralysis, but stress management, maintaining a regular sleep schedule, and observing good sleep habits can reduce the likelihood of sleep paralysis. Some strategies for improving sleep hygiene include keeping your bedtime and wake-up time consistent, even on holidays and weekends, ensuring a comfortable sleep environment with suitable bedding and sleepwear, and a clean, dark, and fresh bedroom. Reducing light exposure in the evening and using night lights for bedroom trips at night. Getting good daylight exposure during waking hours. Not working or studying in the bedroom. Avoiding naps after 3 p.m. and no naps for longer than 90 minutes. Not eating a heavy evening meal or eating within 2 hours of going to bed. Not sleeping with the lights or television on. Abstaining from evening alcohol or caffeine products. Exercising daily, but not within 2 hours of bedtime. Including a calming activity in the bedtime ritual, such as reading or listening to relaxing music. Leaving phones and other devices outside the bedroom. Putting electronics aside at least 1 hour before going to bed. The following additional measures may help: managing your depression or anxiety disorder, reducing the intake of stimulants, practicing meditation or regular prayer, not sleeping on your back. That's not much of a problem for me. My favorite sleeping position is on my side, and it's when I get sleep paralysis the most. So I guess not doing what you love is part of it, right? So understanding the physiology of sleep and the mechanism for sleep paralysis is very important to overcome it. Ongoing stress and disruption in the sleep cycle can have serious health implications. Healthy sleep habits are not just necessary for sleep paralysis management, but overall health and wellness. Now, these disorders are not to be confused with the likes of sexsomnia, also known as sleep sex, which is a distinct form of parasomnia and of an abnormal activity that occurs while an individual is asleep. Sexsomnia is characterized by an individual engaging in sexual acts while in non-rapid eye movement sleep. So to all this, I guess it's time for me to share some of the most relevant sleep paralysis events. I like to call it events. I don't like to call it attacks, because attacks gives validity to whatever entity is trying to cross you. I don't swear by it. It's not like I'm telling you, hey, it's 100% esoterical or it's 100% spiritual. There may be a mix in between science and the spiritual world. And I'd like to think about things usually being a mixture of things, you know. But in my case, I gotta say sleep paralysis came pretty unannounced. I can recall it became not chronic, but usual. before I turned 21. I believe I was 20 and almost 21. I was already living by myself. I had a roommate. We used to play rock and roll music, of course, and we used to live the life. So yes, I was abusing all kinds of substances back then. All kinds. That was just before I quit heroin for good. I would quit 1 year later. I'm talking 2007, 2008. It was a gazillion years ago, but still fresh in my memory. I remember one of the first nights I got it, I had just stopped working a night shift. I worked a night shift for a year or something like that. I had recently been laid off. Funny story, but not a story for this podcast. I was at home alone because I believe my then roommate was at his girlfriend's. They used to take turns, you know, in between sleeping at each other's places. I was by myself and I was, just watching TV. I don't really recall. My TV was turned off. I believe it was. But that experience felt more like in the lines, and maybe because of my beliefs back then, I was really agnostic, but I used to believe in UFOs as well, and the experience felt like alien abduction, which today, as I have researched way more about the subjects, I don't believe in aliens. I believe aliens are dark entities, demons, that take different shapes and forms to fool humanity. And I think that's part of the whole NASA scam and the Project Bluebeam plan that they have for us in case everything else fails. I guess it's one of their last attempts at massive worldwide mind control. As far as the experience itself, yes, it was scary seeing aliens or anything like the sort. I remember not being able to move, being able to open my eyes, and there were strange sounds, I guess. You could see how one could confuse those sounds for spaceship or something like that.
Now, I think the notion that it was like an alien abduction, it was more of a wishful thinking, because the two things that came to my mind when that happened, and I'm gonna say maybe on one of them, because I'm not sure about the time, about the timeline. But the first statement came to mind. It was the X-Files episode in which Mulder's sister is getting abducted by the aliens in front of him. And, you know, she levitates, she cannot move, she's in a deep sleep. But, you know, that's how it kind of feels. The other option that I had, that I have seen in Hollywood movies, fantasy, I guess, but, you know, as most of us know, reality is a stranger than fiction. the other reality that I knew, the other possibility that I could consider on my tiny, little, unwise brain at 20 years old was that I was possessed. I was doing so much bad shit. And back then, I was almost a saint, I tell you. I was pretty mellow for the amounts and the crowds that I hung with. For me, a regular Friday night, and I think this is part of the story because I guess there's a chance drugs and substances have something to do with sleep paralysis. A regular Friday for me was 2 6-packs of beer, half a bottle of whiskey, and an 8-ball, and, you know, a pack of cigarettes, and that was it. And maybe I got laid, maybe I didn't. I don't think I really cared that much. I believe my roommates were really competitive in that regard, but I just didn't care about it a damn lot. Sometimes I did. And of course I was 20, but, you know, just not to disperse myself away from the story. My point is, you know, I had these two things as possibilities, and I knew in my conscience, in my mind, that I wasn't doing the best I could do. So I went with the first choice, the less scary one. It was an alien abduction. But that feeling quickly dissipated when I remembered something that happened a few years before.
before that, I had an experience, which I'm not sure if it was a sleep paralysis, but I guess it's the precursor of it. And I guess people who believe in the esoteric will have a field day with this. And almost exact 3 years prior, I was about to turn 18. It was the birthday of my then high school sweetheart, you could say. A girl that was pretty destructive in her path in my life. Of course, I'm not blaming her entirely, but I must say things change. With that person came into my life, and I kind of morphed into being this rebellious jock, which I was, to being this very chemistry open grunge rocker, let's say. That year, we celebrated her 18th birthday at the local college bars. And of course, we got wasted on everything you can imagine. We were almost mocked, by the way, when trying to score dope at 3 a.m. I remember we stole the Volvo, the vehicle, it belonged to her grandfather. And we stole it and partied with it. And I arrived home. I don't even recall falling asleep. And the memory of it, it's still very vivid in my eyes. But I remember I was in my bed with my mirror doing blow. I was 17 years old. This is 17 years ago. And the door opened. And I was really jumpy about it. Because I said to myself, fuck, I remember locking down the door. And now I'm going to get busted. And I was expecting for the person to be behind the door to be my father. And it wasn't. It was a presence I've never felt before. And I'm talking about presence that it's so enticing and so in command of the proximity of his space that you know who it is. It's not your regular middle of the branch demon. It's something else. It's something almost angelical. And this entity didn't even walk. It was like floating across the room towards my side, the bed. And he sat next to me and he pat me on my back. And he told me that I was to keep doing that because it gave him pleasure.
That it basically made him proud. And I remember the ambivalence and the ambiguity of what I was feeling in the presence of this entity, which, don't get me wrong, it was obvious to me it was evil. But what do I mean with ambiguity? Well, I knew I wasn't safe with this entity, and I don't want to call it Lucifer, because I'm not entirely sure it was the High Commander, as Bob Dylan called it on that interview, right? The Commander-in-Chief. I'm not sure, but that's what I felt. It felt like it was a very high-ranked entity. And I believe it was the top because it kind of felt like it was fatherly, what he told me. He was proud of me. He was proud with the mayhem I was bringing on myself and my loved ones, I guess. If you translate what he really meant. Back then, I wasn't as respectful of the spiritual realm. And I tried my best to ignore this happened. And I just flat out ignored it as a very vivid nightmare. It haunted me for days. You know, it lingers on my mind still, despite myself having, you could say, equally or worse frightening experiences and sleep paralysis events. I don't remember being on my back. I don't remember being asleep. I remember me being awake. I remember myself sitting on my bed, like any 17-year-old will do. Now, back then, I didn't want to accept it was true. I didn't even want to think that it was reality. And I remember not being terrified, because he made his intentions obvious that he was not there to harm me precisely, more like mock me, or maybe reassure me that
whatever that rocker dream I was following was supposed to be me. And I carried on with that lie for many years, probably 10 years after that. Age 26 is actually when I decided that I was done with music. So yeah, probably would be that if I didn't make that choice. If you want to believe the story, if you want to believe it was a dream or it was a nightmare, you are entitled to. I'm not entirely sure. I'm simply telling you what my gut tell me. And if you have been following me for a while, you know listening to my gut is often a good bet. It rarely lets me down. So, be my guest. After the entity left, I remember standing up and checking the door, and it was locked. It was locked. So, I even doubted my own mental sanity when it happened. Sleep paralysis didn't happen for 3 years after that. Besides that, I have relevant events in between many years apart. I once woke up to a dozen crows scattered around my room. That one was a scary one because I hate crows and I'm not used to them at all. And they were just staring at me and squeaking, and I couldn't move. And that one was pretty upsetting. The one that I also remember the most was I was taking this nap in the afternoon. I was drinking as well. I'm talking 2012, something like that. I was DJing at this London style pub. So I believe I was drinking and preparing my mix, and I fell asleep. And when I woke up to this shadowy figure. It was hanging from the corner of the ceiling of my room. I was sleeping on my back, and this shadowy figure, I remember it was black as night, jumped into my chest and entered. I woke up at that same time, gasping for air. I felt I was choking. And I sobered up. I wasn't drunk anymore when I woke up. I was pretty freaked out about the whole experience, but that didn't stop me from going to the bar and doing the same thing I was doing for years on a row. I have many other experiences, but I don't think they are as relevant. Well, maybe this one, and I'm gonna close with this one. Last year, it was around April or May, I believe it was past the pandemic or just starting. I had just gotten my podcast closed and my PayPal. I believe it happened on the same week, like one day difference. And I was really bummed out. I was really in a position where I didn't know what to do. And I felt like things had been stolen from me, but at the same time, I also felt I made wrong decisions and I could have avoided certain enemies or maybe, not provoke them as much. But around those dates, I was feeling hopeless. I was about to scrap Total Disclosure as a whole. I was done with it. I was done with the prosecution. I was ready to carry on, and I'm so fucking glad I didn't stop doing this, because I kept doing it for months and I met the love of my life, and now everything is better with her around. But back then it was really lonely. I guess I couldn't trust a lot of people, and those I trusted, I don't know, I was under this character and I needed for things to be a certain way. And I really feel I wasn't a good friend as I could to these people. Or maybe I was, I don't know. However, I have changed a lot of things since then. And I recall Gigi Jung. She's a known medium. She's on YouTube. Her channel is really good. She's really knowledgeable and one of the few real ones and good ones. Like I would describe Sloan Bella, one of my favorites, of course, and a friend. And so Gigi we were talking, and I was telling her I was tired and I was thinking about quitting, and she told me, hey, have you done some research on your heritage, on your lineage? And I was like, no, not really. I mean, I know we come from Europe, Italy, Spain, Catalonia, more precisely. She told me, no, I see some vineyards in France. I see some lands you were forced out or you were forced to flee. You need to look into it before they do. And of course, I didn't know who she meant with they, but I had an idea. I guess she was trying to tell me dark forces who believe I owe them something, who I have exposed somehow. Could be Sasha Stone and his collection of witches, could be anybody. I don't care. They are equally lame to me. One of these groups of people were trying to discover my lineage before me to somehow use it against me. I don't know how that works. I didn't really ask Gigi how that works. I only know that she told me to find it out and go back to her. And so I did, and what I found was pretty unbelievable, pretty amazing. And so I was, looking into my lineage, and I found it. And the same night I found it, I experienced astral travel for like the second time in my life. Astral projection or astral travel is a term used in esotericism to describe an intentional out-of-body experience that assumes the existence of a soul called an astral body that is separate from the physical body and capable of traveling outside it throughout the universe. The idea of astral travel is ancient and occurs in multiple cultures. The modern terminology of astral projection was coined and promoted by 19th century theosophists. It is sometimes reported in association with dreams and forms of meditation. Some individuals have reported perceptions similar to descriptions of astral projection. There is no scientific evidence that there is a consciousness whose embodied functions are separate from normal neural activity, or one that can consciously leave the body and make observations. Astral projection has been characterized as a pseudoscience. So, despite all that noise, I can tell you astral projection is somehow related or linked to sleep paralysis. I cannot tell you how, because there are times in which I've tried to, disassociate from my body and get out, and it doesn't seem to be as voluntarily as it felt times I managed to do it. Anyway, this special night that I was talking to Gigi, in which she urged me to find my lineage, I was severely attacked. It was a sleep paralysis event like no other. And I can say it was an attack. It was vicious. And I experienced this astral projection, but it wasn't myself who was controlling where I was going. I woke up in this empty house, big house. I was locked. I was enclosed in this glass-like cell. And I was on my back. And I was watching at the ceiling. And I remember feeling a very bad energy around. And there it was. A figure that looked like what people describe as gray aliens. Of course, in my studies of satanic ritual abuse and all things Aleister Crowley, I know his drawings that basically describe the gray aliens, meant to describe the demons he encountered during his rituals, and not actual beings from the universe and beyond. Now, you can believe whatever you want. If you want to believe I was abducted by aliens, go ahead. I don't think so. I think I was being attacked. I think sleep paralysis and astral travel are something beyond a dream. It's like a portal to a different dimension in which your soul can venture to. And I don't know why I have this curse
I don't know if it's considered a gift by some, but I could do away without it, believe me. And anyways, I want to share what I found out about my lineage, because maybe that's your case as well, and maybe you can also use it to your advantage. What they told me is that in my bloodline, there's a very strong will. There's a very strong will to fight and to fight until the end. And there is no giving up where I come from. She told me that she felt that my power came from one of my ancestors who was a very important freedom fighter during the medieval times. I was warned that they were going to try and use women to get close to me. I mean, they did try, but as far as I know, they failed. The Castillon surname, which is my last name, is derived from the same roots as the French word château, which of course means castle. The surname was first found in Artois, a former province of northern France where this illustrious family held a family seat with lands and a manor for many centuries. The most notorious ancestor of the Castillon bloodline is Tanguy III de Châtel. He was a Breton knight and French military leader who fought in the Armagnac-Burgundian Civil War and the Hundred Years' War. A member of Armagnac party, he became a leading advisor of King Charles VII of France and was one of the murderers of Duke John the Fearless of Burgundy in 1419, the man guilty of delivering Joan of Arc to the English so they could rape, torture, and burn her at the stake. Essentially, Tanguy III is one of the avengers of Joan of Arc. He was so well regarded that the king, Louis XI, had him buried at the Basilique of Notre Dame, where Louis XI himself was later buried in 1483. That brought me back to the game. I'm of the belief that genetic memory is part of our instincts, passions, and fears. If I can channel this guy's energy and bravery somehow, all while honoring the family name, it's only proper and invigorating. It's in my blood to fight these people. The family was actually kicked out of France and later on kicked out of Catalonia by the same forces I'm fighting today. So isn't that poetic justice for a change? Seriously, fuck these people. Fuck fake science.
This is a tune by Days of the New. It's called Enemy.
And in the meanwhile, take care. We'll talk later.
Yeah. Yeah.
You come to understand it'll be okay, yeah. You need to change it, you need to change it now. I'm not the one who's trying to be, I'm not the one who's trying to be your enemy. That's something you need to change. I'm not the one who's trying to be your enemy. That's something you need to change. Listen, understand it'll be okay here. You need to change it, you need to change it. So listen down, little man, I'm not the one.